Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
The heresy of hope is my chosen topic for this moment, and as is often the case, I'm having a little fun with the words. But they're important words. Heresy and hope, and the related noun to heresy, heretic. In Orthodoxy, heresy is seen as a choice not to conform to the truth. And the ancient Greek word from which it derives means to choose. Hope is the attitude that something better is possible in spite of the way things are. Hope can be seen not as the product of ease, but as much from adversity. And it is an attitude not of waiting, but of action. So for me, the heresy of hope is a choice not to give in to the not-so-great expectation that the way things are now is the way they must be, whether at a personal or a global level. But more about the precise meaning of heresy. One dictionary puts it succinctly. Belief or opinion contrary to orthodox religious, especially Christian doctrine. This, of course, is the sort of things for which religious dissidents such as Jan Hus and others were burned at the stake. A second definition is this, an opinion profoundly at odds with what is generally accepted. Somewhat less freighted with danger, but, you know, something that could provoke a mob or a lynch mob. But to this, I'd also add opinion profoundly at odds with what is enforced by a state regime. Because there can be heresy from political ideology as well as from religious dogma. The word made its way into the English language by a long path. The last stop being Middle English, before that Old French, before that Latin, all the way back to that ancient Greek word meaning to choose. So heresy is a choice, and a heretic is one who chooses. From the standpoint of orthodoxy, heresy is a threat, and the heretic must be countered in some way. And to be fair to history, not always by capital means. There are lesser punishments like cutting out the tongue or imprisonment or exile. And then there's hope. And here's a definition from the same dictionary. A feeling of expectation and desire for a particular thing to happen. Secondary definitions are these. A person or thing that may help to save someone. And another, grounds for believing that something good may happen. Hope is also a verb. To want something to happen or be the case. And I would add to intend, if possible, to do something to make it happen or be the case. Now, from those two passages I read from Ernst Bloch, not to be confused with Ernest Bloch, though if you look at the birth and death dates, they were contemporaries, born just a few years apart. And from Vaclav Havel, you will realize that what I mean by hope is related to these dictionary definitions, but somewhat broader and deeper and somewhat more active. And just to be clear, hope is not optimism. Optimism is kind of a predisposition to expect the positive to happen. Now, whether it comes from something inherent or is learned, I don't know. Somehow I learned when I was young to be optimistic. But by the time I was 30, I was over it. You know, and began to, you know, revel in the joys of expecting the worst and usually getting better than what I expected. but I sure wish that I could be more optimistic in general than I tend to be. Optimism is an attitude, you know, an attitude I wish I had more of, but it is not an action. An optimist would not necessarily suffer the kind of anxiety that Bloch talked about conditions in the world. And it might be helpful to note that that passage I read from was written, you know, just after the end of the Second World War, so he's talking about the resolution and the change is historically placed, but I don't think unique to that time. So an optimist would not necessarily suffer that kind of anxiety leading to fear of which Bloch speaks, for which the antidote is not so much a calming mood, but rather an active attitude, that is to say, hope. Now, whether one is inclined toward optimism or pessimism, hope can still be accessible. Hope requires what Bloch calls daydreams. Daydreams. Imaginings of a better condition of either one's own self or life or of the world. Daydreams. Who daydreams anymore? You know, we're too busy staring at these things most of the time to daydream. Better to turn it off and daydream. Daydreams, imaginations. But it also requires a deep dive into what one dreams of or dreams about, as well as a realistic understanding of the world as it is. Hope is an attitude that leads to action to change the conditions that get in the way of daydreams and get in the way of making what is dreamed real. Daydreams may well be one of the sources of the great expectations you or I might have for ourselves as individuals or for the world, the great expectations we spoke of last week. Now, Bloch was a Marxist philosopher. However, he was less opposed to utopian visions and dreams than some Marxists are, and in fact thought a utopian vision was essential to creating hope and making change. Not that he thought the utopias would become real, but that they were goals to work towards as hopeful people. So it is through these visions, these hopes, that positive courses are steered, even if the utopia cannot be fully realized. So daydreams can lead to ideas and even to plans. An imagined possibility, if deeply considered, can be a source of insight, even a source of a vision for the future. Bloch emphasizes that beyond daydreaming and reflection, hope takes work. The word he uses is construction. He is very much concerned with social hope and social transformation, but it is also personal. And as he writes, the final goal is for the individual to live here and now, that is to achieve a world where each person can live fully here and now. Not just because the world has been transformed, but also because an individual has become a person of hope and has become personally able to live fully in the present. And indeed, well before the achievement of any utopia, such a person can live without being held back by the anxiety and oppressions of the present. One can live with what the Reverend Jeremiah Wright called the audacity of hope. The point is to learn to hope, rather than to be immobilized by anxiety driven by how the world is and fear of what might face us. But there's so much that militates against this happening. At the personal level, there are inertia, procrastination, and fear. There are the traditions that tell us this is how it is and this is how it shall be. The social order is handed down, our place in the world assigned. The economy is what it is, and we must live with it. In his latest book, theologian Harvey Cox, who finally deigned at about the age of 85 to retire from full-time teaching at Harvard, he writes of this in a book called The Market as God. He holds that the methods and values of the market have become the measures and values of our society as a whole, dislodging other values that once tempered these. Indeed, tempered these even in the view of Adam Smith, the great advocate of the markets, who said the market was not the only value that was important in the world. But we live in a time when the methods and values of the market are the measures of society as a whole. What is important is what the markets think is important. And this is the ideology of the present day, more so than it was 100 or even 50 years ago. Indeed, as I watch the gyrations in the markets, I am struck by the disconnect between the enthusiasm of the markets and the reality of the lives of most people I know and interact with. It is this kind of mindset that led Margaret Thatcher, when she was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, to say of the disappearance of jobs, the loss of industries, the drop in living standards, and the loss of social benefits was how it would be. This is the world driven by markets, and in her famous phrase, there is no alternative, known among critics by the acronym TINA. Nothing against any of our friends named TINA. When there is no hope of any kind of different dreamed of world, when TINA is accepted, this would surely be the case. There would be no hope, and that is when hope is most needed. Now, this story is not so different from the story of Christianity, from the councils in the 4th century to the Protestant Reformation in the 16th. That was the word from the councils and the popes. There is no alternative. Those who had chosen a different path were heretics condemned by the church. And even after the start of the Reformation, the condemnation of heretics continued. It was, after all, the reformed Geneva and not the Catholic Rome where Miguel Servet was burned at the stake for his Unitarian heresy. Not all heretics were executed, of course. Galileo was merely imprisoned and silenced. In the 20th centuries, there is, as I've suggested, a kind of heresy in response to orthodoxy, and that it is often punished as well. Persons chose, nonetheless, to challenge the dominance of secular ideologies as well as religion. Dissenters in the Soviet Union challenged the dictatorship of Stalin and wound up in the Gulag or worse. But they chose the heresy of hope. In the later years of Soviet domination of Czechoslovakia, Vaclav Havel and others had a movement of hope that eventually contributed to the restoration of liberal democracy in that nation, but not without imprisonment and repression. Earlier than that, in the 1930s and 40s, opponents of Hitler's regime in Germany maintained the heresy of hope. Many, such as the Lutheran theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer, were imprisoned and executed because of their roles in trying to overthrow the Third Reich. And after the Second World War in the United States, socialists and communists were viewed as heretics, and even without committing any crimes as defined by law, were punished. A small number imprisoned, many more blacklisted and unable to work. But these are all examples of heretics of hope who went up against what was commonly believed and expected of them and considered orthodox in their time, whether a secular orthodoxy or a theological orthodoxy. Their opinions were profoundly at odds with what was generally accepted or enforced in their society. But even when heretics of hope do not survive, and this is the weight of Havel's reading, there is still meaning. In 1927 in Boston, having been convicted of a robbery they may or may not have committed, Niccolò Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti, two well-known anarchist activists, were condemned to death, and they were electrocuted. Vanzetti wrote to his son of his impending execution, "If it had not been for this thing, I might have lived out my life at street corners to scorning men. I might have died unmarked, unknown, a failure. Now we are not a failure. This is our career and our triumph. Never in our full life could we hope to do so much work for tolerance, for justice, for man's understanding of man, as now we do by accident." Now, many successful movements have been led by heretics of hope. The one we think of most in our lifetimes, those of us at least who are over 50, is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But he and others died at the work. They did not survive. But many of the movement's leaders have survived and kept up the work. Rosa Parks lived a long and productive life and died at an old age. At age 88, civil rights leader and strategist of civil disobedience, the Reverend James Lawson, is still at the work. At the heart of the civil rights movement, there was hope. King was a heretic of hope. So was Parks. So is Lawson to this day. And so were many others. This hope was the response to what? Enforced segregation, lynching, poverty, all the things that were fought against in the civil rights movement. As Cornel West wrote in his book, Race Matters, "The major enemy of black survival in America has been and is neither the oppression nor exploitation, but rather the nihilistic threat. That is, loss of hope and absence of meaning. For as long as hope remains and meaning is preserved, the possibility of overcoming oppression stays alive. Without hope, there can be no future. Without meaning, there can be no struggle." The heretics of hope are essential. And today, where are they? Well, certainly in Black Lives Matter. In spite of the horrors that movement addresses and the abuses heaped upon it, it embodies the heresy of hope. And the gathering and encampment that developed over the last year to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline embodied the heresy of hope. The orthodoxy of common opinion is still that you do not challenge the police and the structural racism of which the policing system is a part, and you do not challenge the demands of the market as embodied in powerful petrochemical corporations and conglomerates. You do not challenge that orthodoxy. But we do. So how do you and I become heretics of hope? First, we need to remember, hope is a matter of looking to the future. It is rooted in dreams for the future. It has the expectation that something good or will happen. But hope happens itself in the present, and the present may be difficult. And the difficulties may be personal. It's not just about social structures and movements. Hope in one's life needs to be real. Personal needs are also important, and personal hope is essential to a fulfilling life. But also, second, remember that hope, as Kathleen Patterson put it, hope is not a feeling, it is something you do. So you and I must dig deep to understand our dreams and make real hopes out of them. This will take work. It may be difficult. Hope is like anything else. It takes practice, practice, practice. There are many ways to understand the substance of your hope and the shape it must take. Intellectual analysis, prayer, meditation, conversation with others, study, singing, dancing. A big part of the work of the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia was around the arts. Havel was a playwright and poet. Music was a big part of the transition there. All of these are aspects of hope, whether in personal life or in society at large. All are statements or steps that make hope real. Now, ever since the announcement that Bob Dylan was going to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature, which was awarded yesterday, the day before, in absentia, I have been reflecting on various of his lyrics. And in thinking about the heresy of hope, some lines come to mind from the song, "It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding." And some of you know it, some of you don't. It's okay. And there's one stanza that goes like this. "For them that must obey authority that they do not respect in any degree, who despise their jobs, their destinies, speak jealously of them that are free, do what they do just to be nothing more than something they invest in." And that's the line that keeps coming back to me. Do what they do in order to be nothing more than something they invest in. This song, lyric written over 50 years ago, is a recitation of the extreme of the manifestation of the market as God and the individual alienation it causes. When a person defines him or herself as nothing more than something they invest in, when the demands of job and market define everything one does, this is verging on the nihilism that Cornel West identified as a major threat to the survival of Black America. But is a nihilism that does not just affect Black America. This is a situation to which Margaret Thatcher said there is no alternative. But indeed, people cry out against it, and much of the cry out against it was seen in the votes in the last election. So if any of this speaks to you at all, I ask you to consider the heresy of hope at one or the other of two levels, or maybe both. The personal. If this speaks to your situation, can you daydream a better way for your life? And can you do the hope it takes to bring or start it to bring it about, that better dream of life for yourself? And at the social or global level, if you see in this, as I do, an aspect of what the rapidly changing economy is doing to masses of individuals and families, some of whom have extremely limited options in investing in themselves, can you daydream a better way, and can you do hope to bring about or to start to bring about a better way, even a utopia? Even if your personal life is rewarding and full, you may still feel stuck and discouraged about the state of the world. And if you're stuck and discouraged both about the state of the world and your own life, you need to find a way to dream and do hope in both. If you and I allow ourselves to stay stuck and discouraged, that is, if we feel hopeless, we are indeed conforming to the orthodoxy of our time. I don't want to do that, do you?